Chances are you've heard of Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis by now, but there's another candidate in the race for Florida governor, Darcy Richardson of the Reform Party. We speak to him this morning. And good Thursday morning. Thanks for tuning in. We are live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross. Show's always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, he's no stranger to running for elected office. A conversation with Reform Party candidate for governor Darcy Richardson coming up, and why he says he's offering a centrist alternative for Florida voters. What are your questions? Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, our Art Attack this month is focusing on art in the LGBTQ community. Plus, a look at weekend events and a big opportunity for local entrepreneurs. We'll tell you about PS27 Ventures Leadership Week. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, Jacksonville's Darcy Richardson. He's no stranger to politics. Richardson ran for office back in the 1980s, twice under the banner of Pennsylvania's Consumer Party. He even challenged President Barack Obama in 2012 as a Democrat. Now, Richardson is back in the arena again as the state's Reform Party candidate for governor. He recently announced that former state senator and former Public Service Commission chair Nancy Argenziano will be his running mate. Of course, we're hearing about the running mates today for Congressman Ron DeSantis and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum as they seek the Republican and Democratic nominations for Florida governor. But Richardson is billing himself as a third option, and he joins us live in studio to take your calls and talk about his campaign, which he says is a centrist alternative to the candidates of the right and the left. Darcy Richardson, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And what are your questions for Darcy Richardson, the Reform Party candidate for Florida governor? Remember when Ross Perot ran for president under the Reform Party banner? It's that party. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or you can weigh in, as you already are, on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Okay, Darcy, you've lived in Jacksonville since the 90s. You've been a longtime third-party activist, now running under the Reform Party banner for Florida governor. People tend to think of Ross Perot when they think of the Reform Party, and not much since then. So why do this?
Well, essentially, we're trying to revive the party. The party had a sharp decline after the year 2000. So we're just in the early stages of reviving the party, because I think with the extremism on both sides now in American politics, as represented by the two major parties, the American people need a moderate or centrist alternative. And it's kind of strange because historically third parties, and I am a third party historian, have come from what we would call the fringes or the periphery of American politics. But now the two major parties have shifted, so they're actually the fringe or on the periphery of American politics. And we want to represent the vast center.
You've written about everything from the Bull Moose Party, Teddy Roosevelt's progressive party of the early 20th century, to the Liberty and Free Soil parties. These are all party movements that are lost to time, but you have written extensively about these movements. So let's talk about where you are on the issues. You are not as conservative as Ron DeSantis, not as liberal as Andrew Gillum. And on a range of issues that Floridians are really concerned about, you are putting forth what you say is a third way. Let's begin with health care. What would you do?
Okay, with health care, I would lean probably more toward Andrew Gillum's position, in that I believe that every Floridian deserves to have basic health care coverage. One of my biggest criticisms of Governor Rick Scott was his refusal and the legislature's refusal to provide Medicaid expansion in Florida, which denied 600 to 700,000 working Floridians. These were people with full-time jobs, Medicaid expansion. They couldn't afford the premiums under the Affordable Care Act, and consequently, they were denied any basic health care coverage for that period.
Okay, so you would increase the Medicaid expansion in Florida. You are not where Andrew Gillum is on in terms of other economic issues like a $15 an hour minimum wage, although you do think it should be raised. You're progressive on the environment in terms of cleaning up the state's algae blooms. You've been very critical of Rick Scott's cuts to the water management districts. You believe teachers need a raise, although you don't think they should get paid as much as Andrew Gillum wants, $50,000 a year. On immigration, you disagree with Gillum's call to abolish ICE, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. On guns, you are a Second Amendment supporter, but you believe that we need an improved system of background checks. Also believe former felons should be able to vote. Yes. It sounds like you're a conservative Democrat in many ways.
Pretty much.
So why not just run as a Democrat? Why not seek that party's nomination?
Well, with the Democratic base being what it is, a moderate Democrat or even a conservative Democrat wouldn't stand a chance in the Democratic primaries.
Everyone thought Gwen Graham had a chance.
Right,
she lost.
And she was leading in all the polls, and then, you know, she loses at the very end. But that just is further proof that a moderate or pragmatic Democrat really doesn't stand much of a chance in this highly polarized and highly partisan environment. It really is the extremes at this point. And our motto in this campaign is centrism, not extremism. And that applies to both sides, the Republican side with Ron DeSantis and his Tea Party roots, and Andrew Gillum, representing the kind of Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for Jacksonville's own Darcy Richardson. He is the Reform Party candidate for governor at 549-2937. Now, your running mate is a former member of the state legislature. Ron DeSantis just came out and announced who his running mate will be, a Cuban-American woman, also a member of the state legislature. We will hear who Andrew Gillum's running mate is today sometime. Tell me about the ticket, you and your running mate.
Well, we're very excited to have Nancy join the ticket. We announced her candidacy last Thursday. Nancy brings to this ticket more experience than anyone who's been chosen in either major party at this point. Nancy served three terms in the Florida House. She was elected to the state Senate in 2002, was reelected in 2006 without opposition, and later served as the chair of the Public Service Commission, where she was very consumer-oriented and stood up to the private utilities when it came to rate hikes and things that affect people's pocketbooks. So we're very, very excited to have her. She's a maverick, and I think she's going to help shake this race up.
I think people tend to think of the Reform Party as a sort of a maverick movement. Going back to the 90s with Perot's candidacy, he certainly positioned himself that way. At the same time, there was a lot of criticism of Perot, and I assume you will face the same criticism as critics of your candidacy will see you as operating as just a spoiler. Particularly, I would think more progressive voters might see you as siphoning votes away from Andrew Gillum, thus opening a lane for a conservative like Ron DeSantis to win. What about that criticism?
Well, there's no validity to it. I'm mostly a third-party activist most of my life, although there were brief forays where I was active in the Democratic Party, including in 2012 when I challenged President Obama in a handful of primaries. Nancy Argenziano is a former Republican, so we're really offering Florida a unity ticket, ex-Democrat, former Republican. And I think there's actually a hunger among the electorate, including Florida's 3.5 million no-party affiliation voters, for the kind of campaign that we're waging.
And what would you say to those who might look at you and ask this question? Well, you have no chance of actually winning, so why do it at all?
Well, I would even disagree with that, because it's my intention, although I don't have the funding that Andrew Gillum has with being backed by a couple of billionaires, Tom Steyer of the Next Gen PAC, and also George Soros. I'm not going to be able to compete with them financially. But what we're doing in this campaign is we're going out to every small town and city in the state, sort of like Sidney Katz. I don't know if people remember that, C-A-T-T-S. He was a Baptist minister, and in 1916 ran for governor of Florida on the tiny, and I mean really tiny, Prohibition Party ticket, and he beat his Democratic and Republican opponents. So we think history.
He won the whole thing?
He won. He became Florida's governor. He had run previously in the Democratic primary where he felt that he was cheated out of the party's nomination. So he continued his campaign when the Prohibition Party approached him about running in November. And he stunned both major parties. He was one of the few third-party governors of the 20th century in the U.S.
Have you ever held office before?
I haven't. I've served on various citizens committees back in Pennsylvania in the Cheltenham
Township.
What
do you say to voters who think you just don't have the background to run a whole state? You've never served. You've never held a position that would train you for that.
Well, I've spent my life writing and following politics and being actively involved. And
that's not the same, though, as executive serving. Position. Right.
You know, but I have had top-level management experience in the financial services industry, working for Merrill Lynch for 15 years, where I managed several departments and was also a financial analyst. I've supervised hundreds of people. And Nancy Argenziano, as chair of the Public Service Commission, does bring administrative experience to the ticket. So, you know, Ron DeSantis has been a Washington backbencher. His entire political experience is serving three terms in the House. And Andrew Gillum has spent his entire adult life in Tallahassee city government, you know, starting out, I believe he was a senior in college when he was elected to the Tallahassee City Commission, and he spent the last 20-some years on the city payroll. I wouldn't say that either of them have the executive experience necessary to run a state like the size of Florida.
Let's go to your calls now for Darcy Richardson, the Reform Party candidate for Florida governor. 549-2937. Richardson is based here in Jacksonville. What are your questions? Mark is in Mandarin. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hi, I just want to know what are the functions of the lieutenant governor other than to serve as governor if the governor steps down and to be a member of the cabinet?
Right. That's really it, isn't it? I mean, yes. What else does the lieutenant governor do? I bet most people couldn't name Rick Scott's lieutenant governor.
Right. Carlos Lopez Cantera.
That's
but
right.
You're right. The lieutenant governor has very limited responsibilities. However, the governor can designate gubernatorial responsibilities to his lieutenant governor, and that's what I intend to do with Nancy Argenziano. She's going to be the most visible and most active lieutenant governor in Florida history.
What will you have her be? What will she be working on should you be victorious?
Well, she'll be essentially a partner. And she'll be working on everything that I'm working on. We're going to work together as a team, almost a co-governorship, if you would.
What do you see as the most important issue in this race? I mean, we just went through a whole suite of issues, but what's your issue? What's your big issue?
The big issue is ridding Tallahassee of corruption and special interests and lobbyist influence. Speaking of that, Ron DeSantis' choice for lieutenant governor, Jeanette Nunez from Miami-Dade, she's been in the state house for 4 terms or 8 years, and everyone says that nobody has a negative thing to say about her. Well, that's because she's in the pocket of the special interests and the lobbyists.
How so?
Well, if you just take a look at her most recent campaign in 2016, and you'll see that she raised $408,000, but only a handful of those contributions came from individual Floridians. It was all the special interests, the Coke industries, the realtors, the Florida Chamber of Commerce, Walmart. It's all the special interests that contributed to her campaign, which I estimate at between 85% to 90% of her contributions were from what we call special interests.
And of course, we will see Mr. Gillum receive lots of funding from not only billionaire donors like Tom Steyer in California, but other related groups. Special interest money in politics is not unique to Florida, of course.
Right.
But how would you break that system in Tallahassee, which is so entrenched?
Well, one of the things we have to do is close the revolving door between elected officials and the special interests. A lot of former legislators become lobbyists, and And pretty much, you know, one of the things that the Reform Party was founded on was term limits. But to be perfectly honest, term limits have actually enabled the lobbyists to gain even more power and influence, because you constantly
have... The politicians come and go, the lobbyists stay.
Right. They're the, quote, experts, end of quote.
They hang around for a long time.
So the newly elected representatives rely on them heavily.
Barbara is in Arlington. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I just would like to say that I think that Mr. Richardson is doing a disservice to the people that he claims that he wants to represent, because he'll be taking voters from the Democratic Party who think a lot of, you know, the same way that he does, except that they will be going to him, and therefore DeSantis will get in. I think he would be better serving his constituents if he would try and put some pressure on the Democratic Party and work with Gilliam and, you know, try and get some of his ideas into the Democratic Party.
Okay, thanks, Barbara. So, yeah, I got your point. And I appreciate that call. By the way, Darcy, lots of tweets for you saying pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Janet. No, this is Jill Stein Redux, referring to the Green Party candidate Jill Stein in 2016, who Democrats saw as a spoiler. Adam tweets the show, Darcy isn't going to like this, but this election, 2018, is not the time for people to gamble on long-shot third-party candidates. Nader gave us Bush. Third parties probably gave us Trump. DeSantis versus Gillum is too close, he says. So what about that? That criticism that you're going to effectively act as a spoiler and, in your mind anyway, one extremist or the other is going to win.
Right. Well, I would estimate when Andrew Gillum was nominated a week ago Tuesday, that 85 to 90% of the people that voted for him in the Democratic primary are really unaware of the FBI probe hanging over his head. And that's been a 2-year investigation by the FBI, which has now implicated his former campaign treasurer, Adam Corey, and now apparently his brother, Marcus Gillum, as well, who, according to reports, was being paid by undercover FBI agents posing as developers who wanted to get the mayor's ear. So this, the Republicans are going to, they don't need me to be the spoiler. The Republicans are going to bring this out with massive advertising this fall. And I would say to progressive Democrats and moderate Democrats, when that happens, we're here. We will be the opposition to Ron DeSantis. Democrats really didn't seriously scrutinize Andrew Gillum and his record. Tallahassee has the highest crime rate of any city in Florida. They have a surging homicide rate.
That's been disputed. I mean, there are warring statistics on that.
Okay.
But technically Jacksonville has the highest murder rate in Florida, but go ahead.
Point well taken. I just fear that the Andrew Gillum candidacy is going to implode. And
where are you on DeSantis? Do you hope to draw any Republican voters from the DeSantis column?
Yes. In fact, we just got back a few hours ago from, a visit in Tampa, where we met with some of Adam Putnam's people who are not ready to embrace DeSantis. Next week, I'll be going to Key Largo, and on my way back, stopping in Miami and St. Martin County. But I'll also be stopping in Broward to meet with a former Republican county commissioner who's looking for a new candidate. So there are Republicans out there. A lot of them are former Jeb Bush people who are taking a serious look at us.
And let's go to a few more calls now for Darcy Richardson. Lisa is in St. Augustine. Hi, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I completely reflect all the things that previous callers and texters have said about the spoiler point on Nader and Jill Stein. But also have to say, you know, your guest is being pretty disingenuous on some points and throwing in some whistles in terms of like campaign funding and talking about Tom Steyer and Soros, when actually Gillen's candidacy was very grassroots, and he received the least money of all the candidates. I actually voted for Graham because I thought she was a more moderate Democrat that had a shot, but I just see him being very damaging to the end result, and we're going to end up with DeSantis with him in the race. And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. And getting pushback from emails, too, for you, Darcy. Here's an email from Clyde. In recent years, we have had several ego-driven, not ready for prime time candidates, such as Jill Stein, Ralph Nader, and Gary Johnson. Arguably, they have made the difference in swinging those elections to regressive and barely competent administrations. How is your candidacy any different? Ego and narcissism is defined by a Merrill Lynch middle manager assuming he can run the third largest state in the U.S. So, some harsh words out there for you. Is this just an ego trip for you?
Well, I think a lot of the listeners don't understand this candidacy. I think in the end, I'm going to pull equally, or the Richardson Argenziano ticket will pull equally from Democrats and Republicans. There's even a chance that we will actually pull more Republican votes away from DeSantis than we will cost Gillum in terms of popular support.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm basing that on the inquiries and phone calls that I'm receiving and have been receiving for the past week and a half after DeSantis won the Republican nomination. I mean, we're talking about a former county commissioner in Broward County, one of the largest counties in Florida. I've met with several Putnam people in the Hillsborough County area. There are some other Republicans who backed Bob White, a kind of libertarian-leaning Republican, that are interested in our ticket. So I think actually as far as organized support and the type of people that are stepping forward, there's actually been more Republicans than Democrats. So I refute the notion that we're going to cost Andrew Gillum this election. And as far as a former libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson and certainly Ralph Nader, I think they were both very well qualified to run for the presidency. So I dispute that also. And the votes do not belong to the duopoly. We're a free country. Everyone has an independent mind and can make their own decisions as far as the direction they want to see their country or their state go.
Thanks for being with us today. He's Jacksonville's Darcy Richardson, the Reform Party candidate for governor. And we'll continue to cover the governor's race here on this program right up to Election Day. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
And much more still ahead later. Look at weekend events. But up next, the Art Attack, talking about art in the LGBT community. Back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical for your safety in a weather emergency. Visit a public library to get your 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide. Stay informed with real-time updates at jaxready.com or download the Jax Ready app to also identify your specific zone and important information. Keep your radio on 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
I'm Stephen Dubner, host of Freakonomics Radio. Every week, Freakonomics Radio explores the hidden side of everything, from what our Google searches reveal about us, to whether the American dream is still alive, to whether rich people are really more selfish than poor people. I hope you'll join me Sunday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Vincent Gardner presents the music of J.J. Johnson.
It's like there was B.J.J. and then after J.J. And after, nothing was the same.
Plus rare, unearthed interviews.
news
and stories from his wife, Carolyn.
I made JJ mop the floor, put the dishes in the dishwasher. I said, you are a celebrity to the world, but you're my husband.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
You've got to have art.
All you really need is art. When those little things in life make you frown, come on down and get a start. First you got to have art, a great Rembrandt.
You got to have art, right? Welcome back, everybody. Well, the local art and culture scene is heavily influenced by the city's LGBTQ community. Through so many genres, these artists are expressing their identity and life experience, and in turn, they affect how we interpret art. That's the topic of our art attack today on the show, as we welcome Lee Hamby of the Five and Dime Theater. Good morning.
Good morning.
Visual artist Elaine Hosking.
Good morning.
Filmmaker Keegan Anfuso.
Good morning.
And theater and film actor Eric Yarum.
Good morning.
Good to see you guys here. Okay, and this is a very timely topic in terms of what's going on in popular culture. This new cable show called Pose is about the transgender community in New York. There are a new slate of shows on Broadway featuring trans and gender nonconforming characters. So at the national level, this is a big deal in the art world, but at the local level too. Lee, what are some examples that you know of?
Oh, gosh. I think there's so many examples you can't even explain them all. But I know in the theater world, it's a major topic that we like to cover, especially at the Five and Dime, is we always say, we like to tell everybody's story. I know last season we did a show called Here, which dealt with long story short, a very crazy family of all sorts, and there was a trans character in the show. And so casting that in our community was interesting, because we got very excited about it in being able to give an opportunity to an actual trans actor in our community was, I think, a huge thing. It became very difficult, actually, because it seems that people, if it's not their exact story, that they're afraid to talk about it or they don't agree with it. So it became a kind of a topic of conversation with us in the casting of that show. And so it was exciting to do, but it became also hard because it's something that a lot of people are not used to doing. There's not a lot of trans actors in town.
Right.
So it was an interesting experience.
Okay. And whether it's theater, film, music, visual art, we'll talk about it all here this morning. All these mediums are powerful ways to express identity and to tell a story. Keegan, you are working on a project, I think, right now. Can you tell us about it?
I am. And I would say that both a pro and a con of the film is that because...
And what's the film called?
Oh, I'm sorry. The film is called The Gray Area. And we are describing the film as the perspective of a masculine female, but in a broader sense, it's more about how masculinity seems to be frowned upon in women. And something that is interesting that keeps happening with the film is because I am the co-director as well as the main subject, and I myself identify as female, and I am lesbian. The film keeps kind of gravitating towards being described as a film about a lesbian in the South. People think that it's, you know, just a lesbian film because I happen to be a lesbian director and I'm the main subject. But really, it's not a film about being a lesbian in the South. We consider it to be a film about being a woman anywhere. So trying to make sure that we're speaking on issues that do relate to the LGBTQ plus community in the film, but also being able to say it's not something that just affects that community. It's something that affects women in general.
And when people see the film, people that might not have a deep understanding of the community, it's a window into it for people to try to understand better.
We hope so. Yeah. We hope so.
Okay. And so let's talk about some other genres here. Elaine Hosking, yes. You're a visual artist. How do you use your art in this way?
So I think the sexuality and gender identity have influenced all of my art. Sorry. So gender and identity, sexual identity have been a huge portion of all of my art, whether I've realized it or not. so I kept telling people like, oh no, my art's not about this certain topic, or it's not about being a lesbian or being, you know, gender non-binary. It's not like necessarily about that per se, but there's still like undertones in my art that I've never even noticed until somebody else has brought it up. So I did this one project about a year and a half ago, and it was called Bodyscapes, and I used nude models, but they were all pre-hormone replacement therapy trans men. Mm. And they were nude, which is a very touchy subject for a lot of people that have gender dysmorphia and that are, you know, in that beginning stages of transitioning, whether medically or not. And I think it was like really cool that these people were vulnerable enough with me to let me use their body as a canvas for my visual art. So what I did is I took their nude figures and I placed miniature figurines to create a whole new scene so that their body was the landscape instead of being the subject on focus. So that was a really cool project that I got to do, that I collaborated with other artists and with other people in the LGBT community. And it was just really cool that mm-hmm. they let me share that experience with them.
Okay. And, you know, despite all the gains in recent years, this is a vulnerable community in many ways. And I think the art world is a place where people who are experiencing all of this can feel empowered to express themselves and express priorities. And so on stage and in film, Eric, you know, I tend to think in particular of acting and storytelling in movies and on television as the medium that's most powerfully brought the rest of America along into better understanding and acceptance. You go back to Will and Grace in mm-hmm. the 90s. That sitcom, I think, made a huge impact in terms of helping reduce prejudice and helping Americans realize that we're all just human beings. You know, acting is a big part, I think, of communicating about this community to the wider public.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you touched on Will and Grace, Queer Eye, the original, as well as the new one, are both also great shows that have made attempts at opening that conversation. And I think that's really the goal of it, is to start conversations. Because within a given piece, you can always have a message, but I believe like good art asks questions and great art doesn't try to answer them and leaves it to your audience to have those conversations in their home or in their community and just try to talk about these things and try to normalize them and understand them. Because if you talk at people, you can't change culture. It's getting people to talk with each other about it and to have the lexicon to do so, as well as a productive conversation, mm-hmm. I think is really the name of the game.
Yeah. And in Jacksonville in particular, I think the community has really leaned on the creative community as the city went through the whole process of updating the city's human rights ordinance. Mm-hmm. How do you see the art and culture community as having an impact there? Lee?
I think, I mean, especially in theater, is I think it's always been a safe space for the gay community. It's always been accepting. I can't say that really about the visual arts community, or I mean, I think the arts in general have always been a safe place for the LGBT community. But I think we as a community have such a voice. And we can make a huge impact with that voice if we really believe in what we're saying.
Keegan?
I actually do have a pretty strong opinion about what I realized was going on while the city was all discussing the HRO. And I call it invisible monsters. And it was like this really interesting thing to realize was happening with people who were debating about the HRO, and they were so concerned. A lot of people were very scared about these imaginary monsters, these, you know, scary gay and trans people that mm-hmm. were going to do terrible things to them in, you know, dark spaces. And hearing people speak about that, just kind of for me as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, as a documentarian at heart, it just really sat in my brain that that means now more than at any other time, it's so important to share stories, to tell people's stories, to humanize them. Because if we can introduce these people as human beings to other people, mm-hmm. they'll stop being imaginary monsters. So they can put a face with this idea of what does a gay person look like? What does a trans individual look like? Oh, they're not so scary. You know, they're just people, and they're people with these amazing stories and these struggles that we can all relate to. And then we can, like I said, see them as human beings and understand they deserve the same rights as everybody else.
And art is really still, I think, the most powerful medium, the most powerful way to do that. Elaine, you know, what you told a minute ago about your project, I think, is a great example. And so what's cool about this monthly segment that we're doing now is it's just exciting to feature so many local talented people all the time, but in this coordinated way. Where do you see this conversation going from here in Jacksonville?
So, I think the conversation before was based more around acceptance. Like, how do we accept these people in our lives? How do we accept, you know, these people in our communities? And I think the conversation has shifted in the direction more of affirmation instead of acceptance. So since the HRO has passed, everyone's like, okay, great, now what? And there's still so much work to be done in making our communities a safe space, and especially with all the murders that have happened, not just in Jacksonville, but around Florida, of trans people. I think that the focus now needs to be more on affirming these people and giving them a voice and making sure that they feel safe in their communities. And you know, it's not just about transgender women. It's about all people in the LGBT community, though we do need to place a big emphasis on these people that are clearly being attacked. And I think having a space where we're talking about lifting these people up and empowering them is going to be such a huge asset to the LGBT community and Jacksonville as a whole community. That I think that's really where this conversation needs to go if it's not going there already.
Okay. And in the limited time we have, what projects can you guys promote that you're working on? We talked about Keegan's film. What else are you up to? Eric?
I'm currently playing the lead role of the Cat in the Hat in Seussical at Orange Park Community Theater.
Oh, very
which
nice.
Runs through September 23rd, which is we've been told is a really great show and a really great team. We'd love to have anybody
Everyone
come out and
go see the show. Right. And what's Five and Dime doing?
So we're in rehearsal for a show called Buyer and Seller, which is a hysterical comedy about a guy that works in the underground mall of Barbara Streisand in her Malibu home.
What?
Yes.
Does she actually have that?
Yes. And it's very, very funny. It's a one-man show starring Bradley Akers. And we started rehearsals last night, and I laughed my tail off already.
Now, I know that Babs has this big compound in Malibu with a bunch of houses, but is there actually an underground, in real life, is there actually such a thing?
Downstairs, she has this thing set up where it looks like a mall, and she's got all these displays of dolls, her old dresses, things like that, so she can go down and peruse things as she... I know. So please come see the show, because it's really ridiculous and hysterical and amazing. So, yeah.
You need to check out the work of all of these talented people. Thanks so much for joining us today. Lee Hamby of the Five and Dime.
Thank you.
Visual artist Elaine Hosking, filmmaker Keegan Amfuso, and actor Eric Yarm. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
A quick break and we're right back. Welcome back. It is an amazing opportunity for local entrepreneurs. PS 27 Ventures is hosting its fifth annual Leadership Week this month for people looking to start or grow their business, get intense leadership training, and possibly access to venture capital. CEO Jim Stallings is here now with more, and good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, so this is everything from learning how to communicate as a leader, how to build a team, how to fund a new business. It's like boot camp for a CEO, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing what this has become. You know, this thing started some years ago with two people at my dinner table, and has grown into about 45 entrepreneurs, 15 teams from all over the country. And they start out with a purpose-driven session, you know, how to become a purpose-driven company, a purpose-driven leader. And then we go into how you to understand emotional intelligence, how you impact others, how they react to you, and then high-performance team building. We go into, literally, there's a session on wellness, how to sleep well and get your energies, because being an entrepreneur today is like being a professional athlete.
Right. I mean,
it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, really intense kind of thing. So we go through all of that to make them the best leaders they can possibly be.
And then you sort of almost not as tough a way as Shark Tank, but you fund ideas that you think have potential. And you've funded some successful local and national businesses.
Yeah, we've funded some companies here locally and some from across the region, companies out of Orlando and Tampa and South Florida. But this has grown beyond that. I mean, we actually have companies coming in from out of the country. We've got a team coming in from Ontario, Canada, Imaginix. They've got a platform for gaming. They're working with a NBA on a program, and they're coming to the United States to scout out this area. They're going to be in Leadership Week. We've got a telemedicine company out of Orlando that's going to be in Leadership Week. We've got five companies possibly coming out of New York City that are financial services companies, funded by Morgan Stanley. So this has grown beyond just Jacksonville.
It's getting bigger all the time. Now, in a moment, we're going to come back with Jim and tell you how you can apply to be part of Leadership Week this month in Jacksonville with PS27 Ventures, because the deadline is coming up soon.
Yeah, it's very close.
So keep listening through the break as we reveal that and also talk to the Spectator with some weekend and September events. We'll be right back.
ViStar Credit Union, focused on offering choices in checking, savings, and certificates to its members while remaining financially strong since 1952. ViStar, we never forget that it's your money. Information 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
The Alhambra Theater and Dining presents the musical comedy Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? The Catholic Education of 8 Chicago Children in the 50s. First Confessions, Puppy Love, Patron Saints, and Teacher's Pets. Opens September 12th. Tickets at alhambrajacks.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Norm Eisen, President Obama's ethics czar and Obama's ambassador to the Czech Republic. Eisen also co-founded CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, which has filed legal challenges against President Trump alleging ethics violations. Eisen's new book is about his years as ambassador and the spread of illiberalism. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Is a job always just a job?
There is no job that's better than another job. It might pay better, it might have better benefits, it might look better on a resume and on paper, but actually, it's not better.
Why we value some types of work more than others in this country and what we can do to change that. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Big tech has struggled to balance free speech with hate speech and those out to promote wild conspiracy theories. The Trump administration now says it's exploring whether to regulate Google. Others, including some on the right, have suggested these companies should be regulated, run by the government as public utilities. Can big tech provide Congress with some big answers? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Okay, Jim Stallings, PS27 Ventures, you're going to have the CEO of Black Knight Financial talking at your Leadership Week later this month. And if an entrepreneur is out there listening, they want to apply right now because the deadline's coming up to be part of this. Can you tell us how to apply?
Yeah, so the deadline is the end of this month. We're getting applications from all over the country. So the end of this month is the deadline. You've got to get an application. Just simply go to ps27ventures.com. Look for the tab that says apply here. The wonderful thing that's happened this year is we've got sponsors that are saying we will provide scholarships for the best ideas, the best teams. So you'll get evaluated and you'll find a sponsor. Florida Blue, FNF, FIA, several little companies around this area have targeted sponsorship dollars to underwrite all of these teams that are coming in. So it's
so
a fantastic
program.
There's
money on program. The table, people.
There's right? money on the table.
That's right.
We're also going to have Anthony Jabbour, who's the CEO, to come in and talk about innovation, how they see the market changing with innovation in their company, and talk a lot about leadership and entrepreneurship.
It's a great opportunity. If you're starting or growing your business, go to ps27ventures.com and apply to be part of their Leadership Week. CEO Jim Stallings, always good to see you. Stick around, why don't you?
Thank you.
Right now, we've got some ideas for your weekend. Lots of action at Daly's Place and Katie Lang coming to town here as she is every other Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the CEO of thespectator.com, Carrie Speckman,
Yay.
Is here today. You need venture capital funding.
Yeah, I sure do.
I'll arrange a sit down. How about that?
Do that.
High level talks.
Oh, yes, because I'm so high level.
All right, what's going on?
Well, Sunday is the Jags' first game. It's an away game, but it's still the first game. So, like, pretty mm-hmm. much every bar, restaurant in town will be showing the game.
Okay.
So go see it. Support Jags.
Yes.
Monday, Katie Lang at the Florida Theater.
And, yeah, this is the 25th anniversary of her album Ingenue, which won
Constant
Grammys.
Craving. Is
yeah.
that what I hear?
Constant Craving, which was one of her biggest hits, and she's going to be an amazing show.
Yes, and she will be performing other classics from her 30-year repertoire.
Yeah, very nice. That's Katie Lang coming up Monday at the Florida Theater. Some tickets still available, and lots of music all over town.
I know I'm going to see you at the Deep Purple and Judas Priest concert.
Front row, baby.
I knew it. You're going to be in your leather and your studs. I know you.
That's Wednesday at Daly's Place. And then, I did not realize Judas Priest lost out.
Yes.
For induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Last year in October.
To Bon Jovi?
Yes. What a slap in the face to them.
That's just not right.
Well, personally.
That just ain't right.
It is what it is.
All right. Dierks Bentley coming to Daly's Place this month.
Yes, that will be next Thursday. And Thursday the 13th. Then Friday at Daly's Place, Sting and Shaggy, they did an album together, a Caribbean inflected album.
You used inflected in your description. That's very CEO of you.
Is it?
Venture capital coming your way, baby. Jim Stallings is still sitting right here.
The album is called 44/876. I have no idea what that means. But they will be playing their songs together, and then they will collaborate on each other's songs.
Okay, and then the symphony opens Saturday, September 15th with
yes.
a big, big guest, Branford Marsalis. Brent,
yep, mm-hmm, that will be awesome.
And Courtney Lewis conducting.
Of course.
And then all the way to Sunday, September 16th, it's the first home game.
We didn't even plan that.
The yes. Jaguars and the Patriots.
Boo. Miles Jack wasn't down.
That's going to be a good game.
Yes.
That's a grudge match, isn't it? Yes. Got to go see that one.
Yes.
You going to be there?
I'll be there.
Yeah. Got good seats?
Got great seats.
You got CEO seats. I know you do. Do you have box seats?
Got box seats.
Yeah, oh, I knew it. On. I knew it.
Do you have RAM? You
should invite. We come and hang out in your box?
Melissa and I will be at
the Jaguars game.
I don't know.
We're still being evaluated. It's like Shark Tank.
You guys are a little rowdy.
Only the best get in.
You guys are a little rowdy.
Yeah.
Too rowdy for the box.
We are a little rowdy.
Yeah, that's true. But you'd have more fun if we were there.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially the spectator.
That's true.
Okay, so let's also make the point that every Tuesday night you are doing trivia at Crispy's in Springfield.
That is correct. And Melissa Ross herself has even made an appearance.
Yeah, and you've never let me forget it either because I lost so badly.
Well, you didn't come in last.
That's true. At least
so
I wasn't
winning.
Last.
Well, I always like to say furthest from first instead of last.
Furthest from first.
Yeah.
Go to thespectator.com for a full look at...
Oh, trivia tonight at European Street in San Marco.
At events and trivia tonight at E Street. It's always fun if you go out to one of Carrie's trivia nights. You will not regret it. Good to see you.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
And an inconvenience. Yes. She's the spectator, everybody. And thanks for listening to our show. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme is composed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on 1A, Big Tech goes to Washington yet again. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening to 89.9. And we'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Also, if you missed any part of today's show, tune in tonight at 8 p.m. for our rebroadcast. If you're listening to the rebroadcast, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.